Alpert, John Novick, and Ben Rosloff. The film is called All for One. You can check it out at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Has a job opening for a broadcast engineer here in New York City. Find out more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Carla Wells, and Maureen Sheikh, Laura Gattasino. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBLO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on Positively Revolting, Ani and Teresa discuss the rise of fascism and take your calls. At 9, the beloved community welcomes Dr. Cynthia McKinney, former U.S. Congresswoman and Green Party presidential candidate. At 10, Value Views talks to the co-founder of the Corvallis chapter of SURJ, Showing Up for Racial Justice. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, The Digital Divide talks to Christine Hassel of Geek Girl Con about empowering women and girls to pursue their love of science, technology, literature, and gaming. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by your support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
Hi, this is John Schuck. On the next Beloved Community, I welcome Cynthia McKinney, former Congresswoman and candidate for president. She speaks candidly about 9/11, the deep state, COINTELPRO, the Russians, the media, Israel, and more. Beloved Community, August 10th, Friday, 9 a.m. on KBOO.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
A time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning. The time is about 3 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Positively Revolting, and I'm your host, Ani. This morning, I am also here with Teresa, host of Press Watch. You heard her perhaps yesterday, Thursday mornings at 9 o'clock on KBOO. Teresa hosts Press Watch. Thank you, Teresa, for joining me this morning.
I said, you want to get up and help smash some more fascists? And I said, yeah.
Because she's like that. She's just a fascist smashing kind of gal. And that's why We got married some 23 years ago. Yes, it's our anniversary week. Thanks smashy. For celebrating our anniversary by smashing fascism
smashy,
on the radio.
Smashy, smashy.
All right. So with that, let me just say fascism is on the march. We, I think, are caught in a state of disbelief. We're close-eyed. It just can't happen here. Look over there. We are much aided by the distraction of consumerism and celebrity culture. They are our squirrels, if you will. It's like, oh, fascism? Look, all the signs are there. No, wait. Shiny squirrel. Shiny squirrels, even better. But in fact, it is important not to be distracted and to not be in denial that, in fact, it can happen here. And in fact, it looks like it is. For years, pieces have been moving into place that give fertile ground to authoritarianism and fascism. Between the Patriot Act and the 2012 National Defense Authorization Act, we've lost significant rights of due process and privacy. Americans seem to give up those rights without really even a whimper for the most part, because there were many situations feeding into them, right? They were both sort of developed at perfect times, traumatized after the events of the Twin Towers and the Pentagon on 9/11, 2001. The Patriot Act became law by the end of October, and it seemed as though the majority of middle America were screaming, yes, please, oh, big government, protect us from I'm not sure what. So there was that happened then. There were sunset clauses that, for those of us that might have been a little afraid about the sweeping implications of the Patriot Act, don't worry, there are sunset clauses. It'll sunset in 4 years. But instead, when it was reviewed at the sunset clause time in 2005, it was substantially reauthorized. The version, between the House and the Senate, one version had some significant revisions. The other version did not. They went through the Reconciliation Committee, and guess what happened? It came out with pretty much no revisions, was how that came out. So, fast forward. We have the Patriot Act standing. And then in 2011, we have President Barack Obama signing the Patriot Sunsets Extension Act that extends provisions for roving wiretaps, searches of business records, and surveilling lone wolves for another goodly while, right? Following a lack of congressional approval, the Patriot Act expired on 2015, but then came along the U.S. Freedom Act in 2015, and through it, the expired parts of the Patriot Act were in fact renewed and restored through 2019. So they are large and in charge. They are in effect. And of course, we didn't worry about it so much then. And when I say we, I mean other people. I believe many a program host here and many a person in Cascadia were upset, were concerned, and rightly so. But in fact, again, throughout the mainstream, throughout those that perhaps are not devouring the news, we're okay with that because Obama's a good guy. And when you have a good guy in charge, you don't need to worry about him signing our rights away, right? Kind of like he does with the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012. So the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, for those of you who may not remember, basically is sort of like another sort of extension of the Patriot Act, as it extends indefinite detention to U.S. citizens. You used to be, in the Patriot Act, you had to be a non-U.S. citizen to qualify for indefinite detention without trial. But thanks to Obama in 2012, that can be applied to all. So, excuse me. So, people, if people have been spied on or suspected of being terrorists, often, if you'll recall back to the previous paragraph, without warrant and all that kind of due process, then you can also be indefinitely detained under this act. Okay, so that's all been happening, and we have had that on, like, the low boil. But now let's fast forward. just a few years. In 2016, I want you to recall the dumpster fire of a campaign. Remember clearly Trump's encouragement to his supporters, to his followers, during his campaign rallies, which really looked nothing like any other campaign rally I'd ever seen. That he said, you know, go ahead and beat the protesters, beat the people coming to those rallies for dissent or resistance purposes, and he'll go ahead and pick up those legal fees, right? I think one does not have to stretch to say that encourages violence. That encourages the violent shutting up of dissent. And now that man is in the White House, so let that sink in for a minute. And in the White House, he continues to sanction violence, as in Charlottesville. 1 year ago, if you'll recall, in the midst of a white supremacist rampage of violence, he wouldn't condemn them. In fact, he pretty much gave them a nod. And when pushed, you know, start condemning Antifa and others who came to defend as instigators of violence. And when pushed a little further, he said, well, he's sure that there are good people on both sides, both sides. Who's going to identify good people in a white supremacist rampage where they have beaten and actually killed one person, but beaten many others, sent folks to hospitals, came there with violent intent, but we have the president saying, yeah, you know, good people on both sides. So now we have this toxic mix, right? I mean, first of all, we have this upside down narrative. We're like in a bizarro world where Antifa are being conflated with fascists, right? Where people who are attempting to provide community defense around folks who have declared violent racist intention are being equated. First of all, that's bizarre world to me. That's totally upside down. And now we have this toxic mix of odious hate groups that are coming together in rallies and kind of going on an intimidation and violence tour, right? We talked about this a couple weeks ago with James from Antifa. And as we saw Patriot Prayer here last week, we know that they are going on tour of California with this really toxic alignment of white supremacist groups. And why are they doing that? Well, they're doing it to spread intimidation. They are doing it to commit acts of violence against members of marginalized communities. And we have to also admit that there's another pattern that's emerging from these rallies. And that is when cops show up, the cops are protecting the white supremacists. We saw that clearly this Sunday. We've seen that clearly before in demonstrations in Portland and around the country, right? The cops are consistently targeting Antifa and counter demonstrators while protecting the alt-right hate groups with the very thinnest veneer of an excuse. And that excuse is, well, they have to defend their right to free speech. They have called for a rally, and the police must defend their right to free speech, even if it means killing a counter-demonstrator or attempting to kill a counter-demonstrator by shooting a large projectile directly at their heads. Now, as somebody who has been involved in left centered rallies since I was 14, and we'll call that 1980, I have never really seen the cops go to the line for us to protect our rights to free speech. In fact, what I've seen is cops shutting us down time and time again because you're getting out of hand, people. You're yelling a little too loud. You've crossed. Look, you stepped off the sidewalk and into the street. We have to call this an illegal assembly and shut it down now. And by the way, we're going to, you know, beat some people while we're at it.
It's perfectly clear. Cops hate left protests.
Exactly.
They view them as disobedient. Disobedience irritates authoritarian types more than anything else. Disobedience.
And so that is why we come to you this morning to say fascism is on the march, and it is important to recognize it for what it is. We are in the stage where we have active groups who are there to support an authoritarian, fascist, and white supremacist message, who are, in fact, going to liberal strongholds, if you will, Berkeley, Portland, other places along the West Coast, to specifically intimidate the populace, right? And you have the police protecting them while you have a demagogue in the White House who has encouraged this scenario in the first place. This is a dangerous situation. This is a combination that cannot be ignored.
It really is. And I guess we saw that as we rolled up and your phone rang, and apparently Danielle James, whom you hoped to talk to, has been arrested. And I'm guessing that's at City Hall. We don't know who arrested her.
It is at City Hall. I believe it was the Portland police. And it's true. There's a protest now ongoing at City Hall. And we were hoping to talk to Danielle, who had been a guest on our program here back in June when the Occupy ICE camp first started. And so she was going to fill us in on why they are sleeping at City Hall, demanding accountability for police violence and the connections there between fighting white supremacy, the police violence, and the Occupy ICE encampment in the first place, and tying these things together. We had that conversation, just about 7:15 this morning. And as we were pulling up outside the station, I got a phone call saying somebody that Danielle had just been arrested and had told the person who I was now talking with to call the last number and let me know. So that is up-to-the-minute information. that person didn't sound like the police were raiding the folks that are there at the demonstration. But it does look like Danielle at least has been arrested this morning.
And picking out the leader is a pretty alarming tactic, so I'd like to direct that to any members of the National Lawyers Guild, to Kindle. Are you listening to those who have connections to Danielle James on Facebook? Please spread the word Danielle James has been arrested.
So in looking at the bigger pattern, we know that historically the alt-right are fulfilling a pattern, right? That historically when fascism, when authoritarianism, when that comes to a country, that it is part and parcel with the shock troops. And so as we saw in Germany, as we saw in Chile, as we saw in Italy, when this happens, it comes with shock troops. And I'm putting forth that the Proud Boys, that the groups brought under the large tarp of Patriot Prayer, are in fact acting in that role. And I want to also invite your call. Teresa and I could probably talk about this for 3 days and maybe pause to refresh our coffee occasionally. But let's go ahead and invite you to join in this conversation. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. 503-231-8187. Give us a ring. Let us know your thoughts on the matter. And let's have this conversation because it's super important.
Well, I want to dial down for a second on what is fascism. The word comes from the use of fasces, which were carried around in a bundle with an axe in the middle by the Roman lictors. The lictors were actually elected. And the idea was if they ran into a problem in their district, their followers would, they went around in a group, would get a stick each. They'd unbundle the fasces. And those who used that stick to get their way were using power for its own sake. This became known as fascism, beating with the sticks. Going to the Charlotte Gazette Mail, a historian writing an op-ed, while historians certainly debate the details, they all agree with a basic precept about the core of fascism. An eminent fascism scholar, Robert Paxson, has even characterized that nature in a single phrase. Fascism, he wrote, is, quote, dictatorship against the left amidst popular enthusiasm, end quote. And speaking for myself, I saw this when Tiny, the leader, one of the leaders of the Proud Boys, was either that or Patriot Prayer, we really don't care which, was standing up giving a speech Saturday before they got their ruckus going with a shirt that said, Pinochet, a dictator who killed 3,500 people, did nothing wrong. And it showed a helicopter also, which was one of the ways that people were assassinated. They were thrown from helicopters in order to please the sadistic and to terrify the population. But returning to the text, in the case of Nazi fascism, Hitler based it in opposition to the perceived threat of Bolshevism, which he conflated with Jewishness. and on which he placed blame for Germany's loss in World War I. To gain power, Hitler and Mussolini relied on anti-leftist militias, the brown shirts and black shirts, sound familiar, to fight pinkos in the streets or to attack Union or Labor Party meetings. Pinkos is a word, if you're not as old as me, pinko means socialists. Fascism was also violently social Darwinist. That is, it was based on the belief that the strongest, fittest, most hyper-competitive nation would outstruggle all its rivals and inherit the earth. Put another way, fascists valued fighting, testing themselves against their internal and external enemies in constant bloody trials to see whether their nation was worthy of dominating communism with its anti-competitive ideals of international redistribution and the eventual dissolving of nations, was the polar opposite of fascism and thus had to be eradicated, and fascists fused the idea of the nation with the concept of a single true race. That's why the nation had to be purified of Jews, Roma, and other undesirables. At the same time, fascists wanted to violently strike at pluralism, gay rights, and women's rights, all ideas that animate the modern left. These were imagined as a threat to the strength and unity of the German folk, or the Italian uomo nuovo, or new man. The laxness of pacifism, permissiveness in art, music, and lifestyle, cultural diversity, anti-traditionalism, even democracy itself, fascists held, sapped the strength of the people and nation. Now think of that definition and think of what we were confronted with Saturday. And what they do. It might made right and came before the rule of law and democracy. That's what that fascism is about. So when you hear that the Antifa are fascists, that's just talk. There's no logical basis.
It's a smokescreen. It's a distraction. It's in fact a lie.
What it means is you got close to the truth and it stung, and so now they are going to go with their usual tactic of trying to confuse the population as to what's actually going on.
All right, so let's go ahead and talk to a caller. Let's. Good morning, Cody. You are on the air.
Good morning, Ani. How you guys doing this morning?
We're doing okay.
I'm a strong believer in, like, or at least I espouse Samuel Clemens' statement about how history may not repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme. And I think there's a great deal of truth in comparing the Weimar Germany to the United States in some ways. And in some ways, I might have some disagreement on what we're actually looking at right now, because I have a lot of questions concerning these white supremacist movement, the police department, and the legalities behind what's going on. And one of those is did this group get permission from the city of Portland to do this protest last Saturday?
I do believe that this was a permitted protest, and that is why the police said that they just had to protect them and beat back Antifa.
And I would like to pop in here and say it most certainly should not have been permitted, because the groups were coming on the basis of armed intimidation, and armed intimidation was never free speech. If they wanted to engage in free speech, then they should have very clearly disavowed and denounced the Klan, the Nazi Party, all violent agitation. They should have expunged every one of their members who's been involved in beating other people, announced that they're not going to beat people anymore, then they could have free speech. But that's the opposite of what they did. They fully intended to terrify people. They wanted people like me, they wanted all people of color to be afraid from now on in Portland, because these groups are coming from around the nation and they're just going to keep going until we're afraid to step out of our doors.
Look, as an African-American descendant of saved black male, I can tell you that I am just as afraid of white supremacists as I am by police officers pulling me over for a minor traffic violation and getting my head blown away. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm making this clear right now.
Yeah.
But when it comes up to the United States Constitution, I think it's dangerous for everyone in many ways of how we're approaching this thing, because I think we're going through that same situation to when we're seeing our neighbors getting pulled over by, or being pulled out of their houses by the government. And no one bothered to ask, well, did you like that particular neighbor? And it's very possible that many people who saw that neighbor getting pulled out of the house did not like that neighbor. All right? And I'm saying is this thing could turn into a slippery slope. to where the politics could flip to the other side.
I think it could, so long as we abandon rational analysis, so long as we pretend, for example, that Patriot Prayer and the Proud Boys were not armed intimidation, as long as we allow them to have their little mythology and say that they just wanted free speech, and then we deny their free speech. That would be wrong if it were free speech.
But in fact, when they are announcing that they want to bring weapons and that they planned on bringing weapons to their permitted rally, I think that pattern of intimidation and the purpose of that rally cannot be misunderstood. And for a city to say, yeah, so you've said you're going to bring on the violence. Here's your permit. And now the police are going to actually enforce that permit in a way that I've never seen them enforce any rally for social justice's permit.
Well, the violence and the implied violence is it's that. I understand, based on official reports, that these people did have legal carries. And I also learned from official reports that they should not have been able to have legal carry doing on the property in which they protested. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know the subtleties of this, and no one's bothering to ask any critical questions about this to get to the bottom. There seems to be a lot of emotional baiting, mm-hmm. and I think it's dangerous under the circumstances, just for the Constitution, not just for them, who are American citizens.
I hear what you're saying.
But for us also.
Yeah, it's the slippery slope argument that that if we start having an ideological basis to who we're going to give permits to and who we're not going to give permits to, then this could be eventually turned around and folks working towards social justice may be targeted for, and our free speech rights lessened. And I'm here to say that our free speech rights have been lessened for decades. We've never actually had this treatment.
A good example would be, what if the social justice people decided that they wanted to protest in North Dakota? And what due process have they gone
through? Right. I'm just going to say, I don't need to move it.
I just see a lot of emotional things going on.
Cody, I'm
watching a lot of these platforms lose their constitutional rights.
Cody,
they're not saying anything about this. So I'm just saying, please, allow calmer heads to prevail, and let's look at this critically so that no one loses their rights.
Right. Here's what I'm saying, and you know, I hear what you're saying. I think it's important. Excuse me. But we don't have to go to North Dakota, right? As somebody who's organized with the May Day marches and rallies for the last couple of decades, we have had permits, and we have had the police shut us down halfway through many, many, many times over because somebody stepped into the street without permission.
And the
shutting down part would be very violently shutting us down. So some of us have never enjoyed that. And that's here in Portland. We don't have to go to North Dakota. You know, that's here in Portland that right.
I'm making that distinction because these people came from different parts of the United States as far as the East Coast to do this, and there are a lot of subtleties concerning protests, Ani, that you have experience in that you're not telling us when it comes up to the permit process and how the police department, along with the city government, work with or against these legal permits. No one's given us any details about anything.
I'm saying that when we've had permits, they have been roundly ignored because under a pretense of that person just stepped off the sidewalk and is now in the street, this is now an illegal assembly, everyone must disperse. That's disparate treatment. That is a detail. I am remaining pretty calm here. I'm just having the discourse that my experience is vastly different.
Yeah, we are getting ideologically charged enforcement and non-enforcement already. They beat the leftists and they protect the right.
I think these are details that your listeners would profit from, because not everyone protests. And not everyone have your level of experience protesting, Ani. And there are subtleties concerning protests and how it applies to our constitutional right that we're not aware of that's happening to you.
Well, that's why I'm telling you.
For the first time I've ever heard before on how they treated you as opposed to how these... And look, you're talking to a guy who has to worry about getting his head blown off.
I understand that.
So I'm letting you know there's life and death for many African American descended of slaves out there.
Absolutely.
But they also understand that there's subtleties here that people are getting sucked into, and that we'd appreciate it if you give us more detail on the subtleties so that people can say, yes, Arnie's right. Let's take her side.
Yeah, okay. Well, thanks very much for your call this morning, Cody.
Yeah, excellent points.
We had somebody who rang in and wants to have some talking points to use to try to persuade people who may be not seeing things in this way. So keep listening. I think you're getting the talking points throughout the show. And that's, I suppose, Teresa and I can write the ultimate essay on how to change hearts and minds, except I don't think that we actually know. We're all just sort of trying to have conversations with each other about critically important things, and I have to say frightening things. And so it's very hard sometimes to talk to folks that are pretty invested in the system and in the status quo, because they don't want to see the problems with this system. So that can be challenging, but keep listening. Chris, good morning to you. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Hey, thanks for the show. I've listened to you guys quite a number of years. It's a lot of fun, really. I mean, you provide
thanks.
A lot of good information, and I don't always agree with all the details, but
I don't either.
I consider myself an anarcho-feminist. I mean, I'm
right on.
I'm against illegitimate hierarchy. That's anarchism, right?
Sure.
You hate illegitimate hierarchies. They have to justify themselves. That's what Chomsky says. Couldn't agree more with that. That's great. And of course, feminism. I can't understand why everyone doesn't agree with that. But but anyway, on to the topic.
There you have it. Yeah. Thanks, Chris, for calling this morning. What do you have to say?
Well, I'm just wondering what we're accomplishing out there. As I watched the entire rally on live feeds last Saturday, and it seems to me that, well, plus I'm looking at the Lero City Antifa page, and there was a right-wing rally in Providence, Rhode Island, if you go onto their website. So these things are legal, okay? I mean, they're happening all over the country. You can't, they're legal. They have the right to do it. Fascism is not outlawed in this country, so they have a right to rally. So,
what's your point, Chris?
Right. Well, my point is, you go there. I guess you got to look. You can look at them, but you can't do anything to them. And they didn't. From what I saw on the whole footage, they did not cross into the street and do anything.
What, the cops didn't, or the right wing didn't?
I'm having a hard time following. Are you saying that the Patriot Prayer Gathering
anything.
Folks didn't do anything? They were just there exercising their first speech
rights? Yeah, they didn't do any violence.
Okay, now I'm sorry. I'm going to contradict that narrative because,
okay.
Hey, hang on and let me tell you, I was there. They did do their usual attacks. I did witness one of the attacks. The one that I witnessed went like this. Those fellows with their... with their swastikas and their armor, got into a green truck on Taylor Street at the World Trade Center garage. And at about 3:05 p.m. on Saturday, they exited the World Trade Center garage, seeing that there were black-clad Antifa and or Black Bloc. I think they were just Black Bloc, not Antifa, out in the street. And they charged with their truck, and I got the audio of that truck, and I broadcasted it on KBOO. At full acceleration, they tried to kill with their truck. They failed. They just knocked some people aside. And having failed, they threw an enormous gas bomb, which had people choking and puking on the street. And then they took off down the street, full acceleration. The Portland police also witnessed this en masse. They were in their armor, arm in arm, just about marching down the street. And they proceeded to march against the leftists. So
that had just been gassed and were choking.
And there are many other similar things that can be found on YouTube and on the social media. And Willamette Week, The Guardian from the UK, Democracy Now! And KBOO witnessed this, and all the other media gave the official narrative, which, you know, pardon me, I'm going to say that you are responding to, which, and how can you help it? Because they overwhelmed the four media that I just mentioned. The overwhelming narrative was a lie. We were physically attacked by those people. Of course, they always physically attack, and that's why I say they should not have been given a permit, because they were not here for free speech. They were here for armed intimidation.
And I'm going to go a little bit further on that before you do, Chris. Because aside from they're actually coming together in rallies, what we know as people living in marginalized communities, that we know that the people who come to town for these are involved in acts of violence that are targeted towards people in marginalized communities before and after these events.
They split up into groups of four or six, and they beat up people of color.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean,
so, okay, if you can't agree with us more, then why did you say that they're just exercising their free speech rights and they're not hurting anyone?
No, I'm saying, I'm going to a narrative, see.
Oh, okay. I mean, tell me more of your narrative.
You saw an event that I didn't see, and that Rose City Antifa has not posted on their website, and you haven't posted on your website.
We've actually aired it on the evening news, so...
Why not? I mean, if a truck drove through a bomb at everybody, shouldn't there be footage of this? Why is
We have it on the evening news.
Okay,
yes.
So if you're just going to negate my experience, then what can we do? I've got the evidence. You say I don't have the evidence. How can we go any further?
No, you said you had footage.
Yeah.
Well, show the footage.
I did.
I couldn't agree. But see, another thing, that was at 3
We call that Monday's news.
Right? 3 o'clock is...
So what is your point, Chris? Go ahead and get to your point, and then we'll move on.
Well, I just wanted to go into some detail on that.
What is your detail, Chris?
Well, for instance, the attack on the Antifa crowd, I saw footage of that. And looks like what happened. See, this is what bothers me. Anyone can go into the Antifa crowd, correct? Anyone can be there. There's no like card check. Hey, you're Antifa. Come
right.
on in.
So it's open for provocateurs.
Exactly. That was my point. Somebody threw something at the cops, or in the direction of the cops, right before the violence started. And so, you know, it's a setup. You're set up. But that guy could have been FBI. He could have been a policeman.
Sure.
He could have been a Nazi.
Right.
And since nobody did that from the fascist side, they weren't attacked. They were, you know.
Oh, no, there was no attempt. I mean, the cops weren't even looking
said,
at them. They turned around.
Later.
They turned around so they couldn't have seen. The cops turned around so they could not have seen if the fascists had attacked them.
And I'm just going to go ahead and say.
They were totally unjustified in firing those rounds. That was ridiculous. And
okay.
I hope they get sued for that.
We're going to let you go, but I do want to put a point of caution out there that if you're watching stuff on your live stream and you're not actually there, it's important to listen to the people that were actually there. That's just a blanket statement about experience. Video and live stream is good. Nice evidence. You can feel like you were there. But in fact, if you're not there, listen to the people that were. All right.
Yeah.
Just basic good advice.
Really glad to get that call, though. I mean, I needed that. I mean, because that narrative is out there, and it's the corporate-owned media that has put out the narrative. For example, with the ICE camp. The ICE camp was overrun by cops. There was no negotiation for a cleanup. It used to be a nice, clean camp. I know because, again, I was there. It was very organized. It had a library. It had porta-johns. It had this. It had that. It had a kitchen. And afterwards, it was a wreck, and the compost buckets were brought up so that they could say, oh, there were human feces here, and they made this narrative a false story, a lie for the public, which the public fully believes that the ICE encampment, the Occupy ICE PDX, was a horrible, wretched, trash-strewn mess. And so they have photographs to prove it, but the photographs are effectively staged after people were run out at gunpoint.
I think you made a great analogy yesterday, Teresa, when you were, talking about how would you look if you were in the middle of a move and suddenly you were ran off your property at gunpoint in the middle of that. And what kind of disarray would be left behind. So an excellent point there. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We have 20 minutes to go, and we have William next on the line. 503-231 8187. I'm Ani. This is Positively Revolting. We are here this morning with Teresa, the regular host of Press Watch, who did attend the Saturday rally and counter protest and was covering that for KBOO. And so we're talking about what the implications of that action were, the police response to that, and holding it in the larger context of fascism is coming to the USA. So, William, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for your show. I loved your analysis at the opening. I thought it was spot on, and I feel like I can't get this kind of media anywhere anymore in the U.S. So I want to thank you. And I think you do a wonderful job, and Teresa as well.
Thank you very much,
William.
Thank
you for that. Yeah. I'd love for you to talk as much as you want about specifics of protesting and First Amendment rights and getting away with protesting. I personally belong to a big social group, and I don't need to shout them out, but they're notoriously for using federal property on the July 4th time frame to gather and meet. We're opposite of the Burning Man crowd. Mm-hmm. We meet for free. We typically don't get a permit from the federal government mm-hmm. because we think that they'll just deny us the permit or they'll mess with our permit. So we go ahead and we gather without a permit, and we gather in pretty big numbers, and we sometimes can, trample on the federal property a little bit, and they get offended. And, they love to interfere with our ability to gather, and we do a lot of politics when we get together, and
yeah.
we take the First Amendment right very seriously to get together and communicate with each other, and a lot of us are from multiple states, so when we get together, there's a lot of information. And anyway, I believe, yeah. We have things in common with your protest group. I live up here in Vancouver, and I just love for you to elaborate on how to get away with a protest without going to jail and without getting physically just shut down, kind of like the protest was here on Sunday.
I'd love to know that, too.
Yeah.
I think that you have to be a member of a sort of rabid right-wing squad, apparently, is how you get away with it without being beaten.
Well, there are tactics that minimize that.
I'm sorry, I was being facetious.
Right.
Go right ahead, Teresa, because you're good.
Well, for example, I helped organize an event way back in 85 when... Let me see how much time we've got. Okay, I can tell this takes about 3 minutes, I think. In 85, I was at the University of Texas, and the local McDonald's started running a promotion. And the promotion went like this. They had a little cardboard-framed clock with a little metal mechanism in the middle of it, and it ran for 1 minute. It was a timer. And the deal was you could go into the McDonald's and you could order your food, and if you didn't get it in 1 minute, you got a burger free. But then the workers, who were drawn from the student population, were then given a black mark. And so it was a classic speed up of the workers, and it stressed the hell out of them. And it was obnoxious because, of course, the local fraternities came in and they would put all of their order. They would put 10, they would break up into groups of five and each of them order an impossibly large order so that they'd get a free burger every time, and the workers then would get a black mark every single time. And I went in and saw that that was obnoxious, and I stole their clock. And so I took that back to the Housing and Food Cooperative. It was called the ARC Housing and Food Cooperative, and there were a bunch of us progressives and lefties there, and they were offended by this abuse of labor. So what we decided to do, there were 15 of us. We broke up into five groups of three, one driver, one leafleter, and one clock smasher. We went to five McDonald's at exactly the same time of the evening. It was at exactly 8 o'clock in the evening. We went in, the leafleter leafleted, the clock smasher smashed. They are out of the each of five separate McDonald's within 1 minute. The clocks are smashed, the leaflets were around, the thing was done. McDonald's freaked out. They called the police, who arrived way too late, and they shut down that promotion the next day. So we got our victory and none of us got arrested.
So there are ways, but they would not be traditional ways of protesting and gathering.
Hit and run, basically.
To have a public square and a redress of grievances. That to me in my life has generally, once you start doing anything that's actually threatening, or maybe looking a little bit more than you're walking up and down a sidewalk holding a sign, then we see that the police are pretty quick. Not always, but the police are fairly quick to shut down those that are coming together in the interest of social justice, in much the same way that they are very reticent to shut down people that are coming together for hard right opinion.
Still there?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for doing what you do. And let's, you know, I think also one of the things that I want to inject in the conversation is the need to be super creative in our responses. Because frankly, the idea of just going toe to toe and trying to, have these to just meet the same energy with the same energy, you know, is not really going to transform the situation. I do think that community self-defense is super important, and I am thankful for people who are ready to defend. I am very thankful. And I also want to implore all of us who want to see the world be a better place to think about how to creatively get about to that. Because the idea of defending our communities is super important and must be prioritized, but we also have to do something to shift the paradigm. Right?
Oh yeah, I agree. And you know, and there is also a place for those big rallies where people are just like, yeah, at each other. But I noticed tactics had improved when I was there on NATO Parkway, and it looked like the cops were going to charge as well. In some places, they couldn't because the Antifa had created a very clever barrier. Basically, they had gotten a rather thick tarp, and they had put at intervals plywood on one side of it with handles on it. And so like 10 or a dozen people would hold those handles on one side, and then the other side was a banner which had its message and looked innocuous enough. And then when the police, you know, so that if the police had decided to charge that barrier, they would have been pushing against 15 people at once, which is far more difficult. And I do believe that there are a couple of times when I was there that they prevented extensive violence with those very creative barriers.
Let's go ahead and talk to Steve. Good morning, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to touch bases with you because the gentleman that was raising those points, as he said, he wasn't there, or if he was there, he was wanting to know why the Patriot Prayers can't come down and speak peaceably. Well, then, they're not there to speak peaceably. I myself was there, as well as your partner there speaking. I forgot her name, Teresa. And I was silently riding around my bike, as I always do. The interesting thing was, is I live pretty close to the area, so I jumped on my bike because the news kept me informed on when everything was going to go about. And you're right. What they did was they set up a military perimeter to protect that group. They allowed that group to strategically place projectiles, which are the water bottles, in their barricaded area. And how I know this is because I myself was there. KXL caught me because I rode by a reporter that was taking a breath amongst the melee, and I just simply observed and made sure that he was not freaking attacked by anybody. And next thing I know, he ran into me on Waterfront and did a Facebook interview. So I was there. I guess what a privilege to be interviewed by them, because I got to speak nationally on television during the event. And my point is simply this. I rode down a few minutes before the event, and where the police on the west side had their barricades, there was water placed. 5 cases of 32-pack water bottles full behind 5 different trees. If you count those, that's 160 ready-to-go water bottles or projectiles that were on the Patriot Prayer side inside the barricades that the police set. And the police were 50 yards away in their little briefing with all their little gear, and I rode over there to them after emptying them all and brought 32 over there, and I asked them why they didn't do a perimeter check on this side, because I just found 160 water bottles strategically hidden behind 5 trees, 32 packs of water bottles. So I emptied them, and I brought a 32-ounce pack of empty bottles over to show them the evidence. They just turned a blind eye and didn't do anything. So that's what those guys are doing. They're protecting Patriot Prayer. Then I got an opportunity to be interviewed, and I just simply asked Patriot Prayer, you guys are coming down to instigate and promote violence, and this gentleman is running for Senate. Is this really the representation, and is this really how we're going to start running for office, by getting groups together and bullying people? And if so, this isn't the time and place. Antifa strategies, they are doing community public service for those provocateurs. They're helping the community. They're not the instigators anymore. They will get up in your face if you want to get in theirs. But the riot gear they're wearing, if anybody would critically think, it makes sense. They're mimicking the police, and they're showing we're not police. We're here to protect the people because you're not. So if you want to look at comparisons, look at the police, look at Antifa. You see the same cosmetics now, and Antifa's there for the reason to protect the people. The police are there to protect the provocateurs and Patriot Prayer. So I support you guys. I was there too, surrendering my body and taking observation. And my suggestion, anybody going down to these events, don't go down there and argue. Go down there and be proactive. Look around. When you see full water bottles, take 30 seconds, uncork it, empty it, and then when they go to get it to throw, it'll be empty. Thanks for listening. Everybody, please be alert and stay alive. And God bless KBOO.
Thank you so much for your call this morning. I want to, thank you for that. An interesting clip, and I had meant to prepare it for this program this morning, just to another testimonial in support of community defense, but you can find it quite easily by entering into your search engine Cornell West, Antifa, and Democracy Now!, and it will pull up a 2-minute clip of Amy Goodman interviewing Cornell West, who was at the Charlottesville rally a year ago, and who basically says that he was in fear. He was there with a small group of people who basically were in fear for their lives, as they saw a bunch of the white supremacists sort of bearing down upon them, and that he credits Antifa and the other folks there for community defense with saving them. And that's a pretty powerful statement by an extraordinarily well-regarded academic, theologian, and activist. So I do encourage folks to check out that audio, or that video, actually, because, of course, Democracy Now! Is also in video format. So you can check that out and hear the words of Cornell West himself. So with that, we are nearly out of time. Let's see here. We can go ahead and get Jim on the air. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Ani, and good morning, Teresa.
Morning.
Hey, I was not there. I was watching the live stream, and I did see one thing that was kind of interesting. It was a brief moment. Cop was on the sidewalk confronting two women, one who was carrying a fairly large sign. And they exchanged words, and he was apparently trying to get them to move on down the sidewalk. And they did so. I saw them, they turned their back to the cop and to the camera, and were marching ahead at a pretty good pace. You know, they weren't dilly-dallying. They were getting out of there. And the cop followed them for a little bit, and then I guess the cop got frustrated. This is my interpretation. He got frustrated because they were complying, and the cop didn't get to act out. So then he acted out. He just reached up and grabbed the sign, smashed it to the ground, and started pushing the women around, and then the camera cut away.
Huh.
But it was clear as a bell what was going on. You know, the cop was being just plain.
That's the complaint that I heard over and over interviewing people, that the cops were just basically chasing the anti-fascists all over town.
Yeah, just plain pure aggression. But actually, the reason I called is because I wanted to respond to Chris, at least his opening comments. There's the caller a couple of calls. said, well, what's wrong with people just exercising their First Amendment rights? Every time I hear that phrase, I think, uh-oh, look out. Whether it's your First Amendment rights or your Second Amendment rights,
yeah,
there's nothing wrong with exercising your rights. But the thing is, very often people are exercising their wrongs.
Right on.
Yeah.
You know, there are things that you can do that's legal that you really shouldn't do. And that is a point that I just wanted to make.
Yeah, when a robber goes up to a counter at the 7-Eleven and says, your money or your life, and pulls a gun, that's not protected free speech.
Yeah, you got it.
And when you have armed gangs of folks creating acts of intimidation, committing acts of violence against trans women, especially trans women of color, against people of color in general, against anyone that they are identifying as in the LGBTQ community, there have been increased hate crimes over this last month, you know, that have been associated with this. And I think that is, again, crossing, let's just say far crossing, stampeding over the line of protected free speech. These are acts of intimidation, and the coming together under the nomenclature of a rally is disingenuous at best. This is a show of force. And as we see in historical example after historical example, fascism does not take hold without its shock troops. And again, to look at everything in context, when we have the current occupant of the White House having encouraged violence at his campaign rallies, offering to pay legal fees for people that wanted to beat protesters. And now we see this, you know, unfolding within the first year of his presidency. What do we call that? These things work together, and this is fascism, and it's coming.
Yeah, well, it actually began during the race, you know.
Yeah. It's true.
Before the
yeah, in the campaigns, absolutely.
Hey, thanks for having me on. See you guys tomorrow.
All right, see you tomorrow, Jim.
Well, and since we're getting towards the top of the hour, I want to say again, Danielle James, agitator, activist, peaceful activist, notably for Occupy ICE PDX, which started the Occupy ICE efforts around the country, has rather suddenly been singled out and arrested over at City Hall, and we can't let them have her, especially not let them have her anonymously. And so I'm calling out to Lawyers Guild, to persons who know her well, to that this has happened and it's time to mobilize.
All right. And of course, KABU will be following that story, and hopefully we will have more information on this evening's news. We have just about 1 minute left. So allow me to encourage us to all stay with our eyes open and awake and stay strong together. Practice solidarity like our lives depend on it, because in fact, they do. And I also want to say, even as we live in dire times, and perhaps especially as we live in dire times, it's important to celebrate. And tomorrow, here on Southeast 8th Avenue, KABU is having our block party. We are 50 years old this year. That's right. The station is just a couple years younger than I am. And that means it's time to have live music. It's time to come out and have a good time with each other, celebrating 50 years of people-powered community radio, radio that can tell it like it is, because, in fact, we are made by the community for the community, and free of interference from corporate interests. We do that together, so let's celebrate together. It's noon till 10 p.m.
I'm looking forward to it.
Here on Southeast 8th Avenue, between Ankeny and Ash, there will be station tours. We'd love to see you. So please come out and celebrate with us tomorrow. And until next week, stay positively revolting.
A time when every second, every day.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up this morning on KBOO, next on the beloved community, they welcome Dr. Cynthia McKinney, former U.S. Congresswoman and Green Party presidential candidate. At 10:15's Valley Views talks to the co-founder of the Corvallis chapter of SURJ, showing up for racial justice. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein, and at 11, The Digital Divide talks to Christine Hassel of Geek Girl Con about empowering women and girls to pursue their love of science, technology, literature, and gaming. These KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO. There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras. So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
I'm out to sing songs that'll prove to you that this is your world. And that if it's hit you pretty hard and knocked you down for a dozen loops, no matter how hard it's run you down and rolled over you, no matter what color, what size you are, how you're built, I am out to sing the songs that'll make you take pride in yourself.
I'm Lori Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Don Jacobson.
Together we bring you Moving On, Fridays from 12 noon to 1:30.
We feature both traditional and contemporary folk music.
We love to present live in-studio concerts from local and national musicians.
Tune in, and you'll hear music that is socially progressive, moving, and heartfelt.